Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1874 with a release date of July 12, 2013 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Ham Radio continues its relief efforts in India during monsoon season. Hams in Canada and Portugal may soon have added operating spectrum. The ARRL says no to encrypted communications on the ham bands. The FITSAT-1 ham radio satellite deorbits. And the story of some strange radio signals from space. Find out details on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1874, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent, on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, from Charleston, West Virginia, here's Jeff Clark, KHJAC.
The crisis caused by the devastating monsoon rains and flooding in northern India has so far claimed about 900 lives. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD, has the latest on the role being played by that nation's ham radio community.
Actually, the latest word comes from Jayu Vide, V-U-2-J-A-U, who is the National Coordinator for Disaster Communication in India. He reports that amateur radio storm relief operations have been using 7.073 and 14.160 megahertz for inter-region disaster relief communications. The messages they are handling are being relayed by radio to authorities in the cities of Gwalior, Calcutta, New Delhi, Vadodara, Kerala, and Hyderabad. VU2JAU says that a relief team of four hams will soon be continuing this work, with a further list of volunteer ham radio operators being made ready to go to the region if they are needed. As this report is being prepared, it appears that the storm-ravaged area will continue to receive monsoon relief communications through amateur radio messaging for some time to come. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
The unexpected heavy monsoon rains affected pilgrims and tourists in the holy area of the foothills of the Himalayas on the Indo-Tibet border. The recent rain damage in the area of Valpari, India, has led to a decision by civic leaders to install a permanent ham radio station in the town in the coming months. The station will be used to link the local emergency communications office to amateur radio operators around the world, along with a district office in Coimbatore and a sub-office in Pollachi. The Amateur Radio Club of Pollachi has promised to establish the station free of cost, and permission's been sought from the government to proceed with that project. Once established, it would facilitate emergency communication during time of crisis and disasters. Meantime, an experimental station was set up on Saturday, July 6, and is functioning as a tool for storm relief and forest officials. Based on their positive feedback, a radio club spokesperson says that permission is expected to be granted shortly, and the ham radio emergency communication station should be a reality in about a month. Meantime, on this side of the world comes word that the Caribbean Emergency and Weather Net was activated on the night of July 8th in preparation for the imminent arrival of Tropical Storm Chantal in the vicinity of Barbados and the Windward Islands. This net, which operates on 3.815 megahertz, will continue to function until the storm and its effects have dissipated from that area. Hams elsewhere requested to keep this frequency clear until further notice. And on Tuesday, July 9, Professor Arnie Coro, CO2KK, posted a report over the VHF reflector. He says Cuba's National Weather Service five-day track forecast for a tropical storm Chantal showed a cone of probability that may involve the Florida Keys. At that time, the storm was moving at the very high speed of 26 miles an hour. The ARRL is calling on the FCC to deny a petition for rulemaking in RM-11699. This is a request that seeks to permit the encryption of certain amateur radio communications during emergency operations or related training exercises. Amateur Radio Newsline's Norm Seeley, KI7UP, has details.
Earlier this year, the FCC accepted for filing a petition for rulemaking from Don Rolfe, AB1PH, designated as RM-11699, and put it on public notice. In it, Rolfe suggested that an additional exception to Part 97.113 be made to permit encrypted communications when hams are participating in emergency services operations or related training exercises, which may involve information covered by medical privacy requirements or other sensitive data. This could include logistical information concerning medical supplies, personnel movement, or any other data designated by federal authorities managing relief or training efforts. On July 8th, the ARRL filed to oppose the AP1PH rules change request. The ARRL says, in its view, there is no factual or legal basis for the assumption that encryption of transmissions is necessary in order to continue and enhance the utility of amateur radio emergency or disaster relief communications. The ARRL also characterized as erroneous the assumption that encryption of certain information may be required under the provisions of the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability, or HIPAA, Act. The ARRL is not alone in this view. Several other commenters on RM-116-99 have also pointed out that the restrictions imposed by HIPAA can be overlooked in time of dire emergency. For Amateur Radio Newsline, Norm Seeley, KI7UP, from Scottsdale, Arizona.
You can read an in-depth report on why the ARRL decided to oppose RM-116-99 at tinyurl.com/ARRL-against-encryption. So far, close to 280 comments have been filed on RM-116-99, most of these in opposition to it. You can read them on the FCC's website beginning at tinyurl.com/encryption-commentary. What appears to be some good news for ham radio in Canada. This with word from Radio Amateurs of Canada of some proposed changes to frequency allocations in that nation that'll provide more spectrum to use. First up in the proposed revisions is the inclusion of a new allocation running between 472 and 479 kilohertz. This 600-meter band was long sought and won at the 2012 World Radio Communications Conference held in Geneva, Switzerland. Also some good news based on what's not seen in the proposal. Radio Amateurs of Canada officials noted that the proposed revisions in the nation's frequency allocation table did not include the addition of an appropriate Canadian footnote for the range 5230 to 5240 kilohertz. This for authorization of the amateur radio service 60-meter spot frequency channels, as petitioned in 2010, and the subject of the Industry Canada proposal issued back in May of 2012. Radio Amateurs of Canada calls this simply an omission and should not mean an unfavorable decision on the 5 megahertz channels. Instead, from all indications, the National Society says that there's good reason to believe the 60-meter decision will be favorable to Canadian radio amateurs and is imminent. The Canada Gazette notice that proposes these changes also invites public comment on the proposed revisions. Following the review of comments by the nation's telecommunications regulator, the allocation decisions will be announced and a revised edition of the Canadian Table of Frequency Allocations will be issued. The public response period of the Gazette notice ends on September 27. The Portuguese National Communications Authority has approved a draft decision to amend the nation's National Table of Frequency Allocations. This to give that nation's radio amateurs additional operating spectrum at some future date. According to the regulatory authority, if approved, the revisions would provide hams in Portugal with access to the 472 to 479 kHz frequency band for the amateur service. It would also alter some of the conditions governing access to the 50 to 52 and 1270 to 1300 megahertz bands for access to that nation's ham radio community. This draft decision is submitted to the general consultation procedure as provided for under the Portuguese Electronic Communications Law, whereby interested parties are given a period of 20 working days in which to comment. This means a July 26th commentary cutoff date. With you 52 weeks a year, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline. Heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the Two Rivers Amateur Radio Club repeater, W3OC, serving Monroeville, Pennsylvania. As you may have heard in our break, there are 5 one-second tones that do two things in our broadcast. For the listener, they denote the fact that we're in a station identification break. On a technical level, they keep the few tape machines left feeding phone lines from resetting in mid-newscast. But as we plan for the future, we need to know if anyone else is using these tones for any other purpose during the replay of this newscast. We've heard stories that some repeaters or echolink nodes use the beep tones for queuing purposes, but we're far from certain if this is actually the case. If you're among those who require these tones, please drop us a note to newsline@arnewsline.org and let us know. And please, only those who require the tones need to respond, to which we add our sincere thank you in advance. The FCC has gone ahead with a license class modification of a California ham after it was notified by the supervising VEC that it had made a clerical error, one that awarded James H. Schofield, KI6JIM, a general class ticket, even though he was only eligible for technician class privileges. As previously reported on November 29, 2012, the W5YI Volunteer Examiner Coordinator sent a data file to the Commission requesting that Schofield's operator license be upgraded from technician class to general. Based on the application, the Commission granted Schofield a general class license back on November 29, 2012. But on May 30, 2013, the W5YI VEC notified the Commission that it had made a typographical error in the original 2012 data file, and that a licensee other than Schofield had qualified for the general class operator license. As a result, the FCC proposed to modify the license for station KI6JIM to show technician class operator privileges. The order proposing modification was released this past June 4th. Schofield did not protest the proposed modification of his license within the requisite 30-day time frame. As such, Schofield is deemed to have consented to the proposed modification. Running an unlicensed broadcast station in Metro New York City can put you behind bars. Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kinford, N8WB, reports.
Detectives in New York City have arrested two men for allegedly operating an unlicensed radio station on 104.7 megahertz. The Kings County District's Attorney's Office says Sean Bruce and Solomon Malka are charged with making unauthorized radio transmissions, which is a Class A misdemeanor. To thwart the illegal operation, detectives bought advertising on the station, and an FCC engineer traced a signal to a rooftop antenna on a 50-story building in Manhattan. The detectives then seized the transmission equipment. According to the Kings County District Attorney, Solomon told them he installed the station gear and knew the station didn't have a license. Investigators also found equipment for another station, 91.7 megahertz, which was on the air in June. Solomon is reported to have told detectives he had a license for that station, but the FCC disputes that claim. The defendants have been charged with a Class A misdemeanor of making unauthorized radio transmissions. If convicted under New York law, they could serve up to a year in jail. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford in Wadsworth, Ohio.
According to the FCC, New York has seen more enforcement action against unlicensed operations than any other state, with 330 official actions, including citations, fines, and shutdowns, logged against pirate radio stations since 2003. Previously, it was Florida that held this rather dubious distinction. The FCC has upheld fines totaling $26,000 against Salmon River Communications. This is for not filing for renewal on time and continuing to operate two stations after their authorizations had expired. Salmon Radio Communications owns radio stations KSRA, AM and FM, in Salmon River, Idaho. According to the commission, their renewals were due in June of 2005, 4 months before their licenses would expire. The licensee did seek special temporary authority to remain in operation, but those also ran out. The commission eventually renewed both licenses and in 2011 proposed the fines. The agency now says that it has not received a response from Salmon River, saying no circumstances warrant a reduction or cancellation. The commission upheld the penalties and said Salmon River has 30 days to pay or file a further appeal. Add Detroit, Michigan to the list of the latest cities to receive national news media attention for the failure of its P25 digital trunked radio system. The system failed during the 4th of July holiday weekend, creating what was described as havoc for first responders. The radio system is for communication between 911 dispatchers and Detroit's police, fire, and EMS crews. It failed at around 5:30 a.m. Friday morning, July 5th, causing a backlog of hundreds of calls. Michigan State Police stepped in to allow Detroit's emergency system to use the state's communication system. This backup was used for several days while crews worked to restore the Detroit system. Like most new digital systems, Detroit's is dependent on centralized computer control. This means failure of the central processing system can bring the entire system down. And while Detroit does have a mirrored backup system in place, it apparently had never been fully tested. It also failed, leading the state to step in. More is online at tinyurl.com/Detroit-radio-down. Some names in the news: a ham radio operator who's believed to be the oldest female sailor to make a solo, nonstop circumnavigation of the globe has finally reached her goal. This with words that 70-year-old Jeannie Socrates, KCIOV, is back on land. Socrates set out from Victoria's Inner Harbor in her 36-foot cruiser Nereida in October of 2012. A note on her website, she says she returned to the harbor just before 3 a.m. Monday, July 8th. The pre-dawn arrival ended several days of anticipation as light winds along the west coast of British Columbia, Canada, stalled her return, which was expected on July 5. This was not Socrates' first attempt at such a voyage. She made two previous attempts to sail solo nonstop around the world. The first ended in Cape Town, South Africa in 2009, and the second journey concluded in January 2011 with damage to her boat in a storm off Cape Horn. During all three trips, KC2IOV reportedly held regular schedules with her support team and also made lots of other QSOs while at sea. Socrates, a grandmother and retired teacher, is raising money for the Marie Curie Cancer Care. This is a United Kingdom-based program that provides free home nursing for terminally ill cancer patients. A website's been created that lists those members of royal families that its creators believe may have held amateur radio call signs. The page is at tinyurl.com/royal-ham-radio. And is sponsored by the Highfields Amateur Radio Club in the UK. If you have an interest in the early development of repeaters and have some free time, then listen up. The July 19 meeting of the Los Angeles, California-based San Fernando Valley Amateur Radio Club will feature a one-time presentation on the history of Southern California's K6MYK and WA6TDD repeaters, presented by Bert Wiener, K6OQK, who is one of the people who made it all happen. It was the late Arthur M. Gentry, W6MEP, who built the nation's first truly automatic repeater. Its call sign was K6MYK, and it operated from above the Hollywood sign on Mount Lee, beginning back in the late 1950s. Its history was chronicled in the March 2004 QST feature titled Once Upon a California Hilltop. Bert Wiener, K6OQK, was a protege of Art Gentry. He became involved in amateur radio in the early 1950s while in junior high school. He went on to build and maintain the nation's second truly successful amateur control repeater. WA6TDD, later known as WR6ABE, was sighted atop Mount Wilson and went on the air back in 1962. Bert ran it through the era of conversion from AM to FM operation that lasted into the 1970s. Bert Wiener's professional background is in broadcast engineering, antenna systems, and measurement systems design. His talk will be primarily the history of WA6TDD, with parts touching on Art and Millie Gentry, the K6MYK repeater, and the part they played in building WA6TDD. He'll be open to questions after and maybe even during the presentation. This very special presentation will take place Friday night, June 19, beginning at 7:30 p.m. local time. The venue is the fifth-floor penthouse of the Northridge Medical Center Hospital. That's at 18300 Roscoe Boulevard in Northridge, California. The talk will also be video recorded for general release at some later date. For those interested in the history of this interesting aspect of our hobby, it should prove to be a very interesting evening, to say the least. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. A broadband communications experiment that involves a series of balloons circling the globe is bringing some anxiety to other spectrum users. WA6ITF is in the newsroom with details.
Concerns have been raised about possible interference from the 2400 megahertz, and 5800 megahertz transmitters on the Google Project Loon high-altitude balloons. Google launched 30 balloons from New Zealand, which transmit wideband 2400 megahertz and 5800 megahertz signals, and concerns have been raised about interference that they could cause to radio astronomy. The United Kingdom's Register reports that when Google engineer Brad Tucker was contacted about the problem, he said that Google had identified locations where Loon balloons might interfere with radio astronomy, that it had shut the transmitters down until these balloons float out of range. But it's not just radio astronomers that are worried about interference generated by the Google Loon balloons. The amateur radio and amateur satellite services are also concerned about deterioration to their communications, especially in the area of weak signal operations. This is because both use some of the same frequencies that the Project Loon balloons are transmitting on. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, in the newsroom in Los Angeles.
Google eventually plans to build some 300 balloons around the world at the southern 40th parallel that will provide broadband coverage to New Zealand, Australia, Chile, and Argentina. The company hopes to eventually have thousands of balloons flying in the stratosphere at an altitude of 20 kilometers, relaying broadband almost worldwide. More about this project is on the web at www.google.com/loon, L-O-O-N. Well, the latest fad in ham radio near space experimentation, at least in the United Kingdom, appears to be so-called Pico balloons. The small foil party balloons can only carry ultralight payloads, typically weighing less than 100 grams. This presents a challenge to the builders to produce a transmitter, GPS, batteries, and antenna that are small and light enough to be taken aloft. Balloons such as these do not go to extremes of altitude, but can float between 10 and 20,000 feet for an extended period. Their 434 megahertz transmitters can have a radio range of up to 900 miles. Several Pico balloons carrying 434 megahertz payloads weighing less than 100 grams were to be launched last weekend from locations in Great Britain. James Cookson, M6JCX, was to launch one operating at 434.179 megahertz USB, transmitting RIDI at 50 baud. David Balkus, M0MDB, was also to have launched one transmitting at 434.250 megahertz, running ASCII at 50 baud. The free balloon software, DL-FLDIGI, can be used to decode many different amateur radio digital modes and is available in Windows, Mac, or Linux versions. The FITSAT-1 ham radio CubeSat is reported to have deorbited and burned up in the Earth's atmosphere in the early hours of Thursday, July 4th. According to Takushi Tanaka, JA6AVG, FITSAT's last signal was received by JA0CAW, at 0307 UTC. FITSAT-1's low orbit meant its lifespan was limited to just 9 months, but in that time it was able to achieve a number of technology firsts. The United Kingdom-based Sheffield Amateur Radio Club has its own streaming TV channel thanks to the British Amateur Television Club. The channel will be used to stream live TV from special events attended by the club's communication trailer, GX3RCM, and viewable online at tinyurl.com/GX3RCM. More information is at sheffieldarc.org.uk. Registration number 300 for the International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend has been awarded to the Loue Lower Lighthouse in Germany. Located in that country's Lower Saxony region, it will be activated during the fun event on August the 17th and 18th by avid contester Rainier Arndt, DL9OE. Now in the 16th year, the annual event is always held the third weekend of August to promote public awareness of the old marine navigation methods, amateur radio, and foster international goodwill. Guidelines and online registration are at illw.net. On the air, listen out for 2E1EUB. It'll be on the air from Scotland as 2M1UEB for 14 days beginning August 5th. He'll actually be driving around that nation to provide other hams with new grid squares they've not yet worked. Activity will be on 160, 80, and 2-meter sideband, along with several satellites. He does accept emails and will arrange schedules to work him at 2E1EUB@AMSAT.org. Members of the Israel Amateur Radio Club will activate 4X19MG between July 18th through the 30th in honor of the 19th Maccabiah Games. The Maccabiah is an international Jewish athletic event held in Israel every 4 years. QSL via 4Z1TL. In DX, word that K4ZW will be on the air from Addis Ababa until July 19. He plans to operate from the Ethiopian Amateur Radio Society Club Station, ET3AA, and notes that most of his time will be spent on CW. He's going to try some RIDI as well. QSL via N2OO. RK4FF will be once again active as 6V7S from Senegal through July 16 and again from October 22nd through November 27th. His operations will probably be on 80 through 10 meters using CW sideband and RIDI, QSL via RK4FF. JJ2NYT will be active as 9H1N from Malta between August 2nd through the 5th. Activity will be holiday style, 40 through 10 meters, using sideband and CW, QSL only via his home call sign. CT2HPM is now active as D2CT from Luanda, Angola. He'll be there till July 26th, operating 20 through 10 meters, using mostly PSK31 and RIDI, QSL via his home call sign. And lastly, VU2UR will be operational as AT20RRC from Bangalore, India through the end of July. His activity is to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Russian Robinson Club with stations on the high frequency bands, QSL electronically to AT20RCC via EQSL. And finally this week, if you're a ham with an interest in radio astronomy, then this is for you. Here's Bruce Tennant, K6PZW.
If you've been waiting to hear mysterious radio signals from space, then now may be the right time to tune in. This, as an international team of astronomers has detected four powerful bursts that appear to come from billions of light years away. At that distance, the radio pulses would each have put out in a few thousandths of a second the same amount of energy that our sun would take 10,000 years to produce. The bizarre signals came to light as part of the High Time Resolution Universe Survey. This is a project using the 64-meter Parkes Radio Telescope in Australia to search the sky for radio signals from pulsars. These are the stellar signal generators that are believed to be caused by supernovas. Because the pulsars we detect lie in our own galaxy, astronomers mostly look near the Milky Way when hunting for these dead stars. But when Dan Thornton of the University of Manchester in the United Kingdom and Australia Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization started digging through the data, he stumbled across the four signal bursts. After scientists extrapolated the data across the entire sky, they concluded that perhaps 10,000 of these blasts are happening every day. It's only a matter of finding them. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW in Los Angeles.
According to researcher Thornton, it's still unknown what these signals are, but at least it's no longer a mystery that they actually exist. More about these interesting radio signals from space is online at tinyurl.com/powerful-signals-from-space. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Pan DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, Twit TV, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available in Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Jeff Clark, K8JAC, coming to you from Charleston, West Virginia, saying 73. And we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2013. All rights reserved.